accession number 20337, Reel 1.
John Wiseman, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Kingston on Thames in Surrey.
Which year was this?
1916.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Kingston upon Thames?
No, my parents moved up to London in 1923 when I was 7 years old, and I went to St Paul's Prep School and St Paul's School in London.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father built up a business manufacturing spectacles and lenses.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
18. I went up to Cambridge, the age of 18.
To read what?
I read history for 1 year and modern languages, French and German, for 2 years.
Which college were you based in?
Pembroke.
And when you finished there?
When I finished there, we are now in 1937. I went into my father's business and then travelled over to the States and met friends and drove across America to the West Coast. I then went to New Zealand and drove right through New Zealand, and we were now in 1939. It was obvious war was about to break out. And while I was on a ship between Auckland and Sydney, war did break out. So when I got to Sydney, I realized I had to get home to get into the army. So I went down to Sydney Harbour. There was a flying boat there, and I managed to get a passage on it. And in 11 days' time, I landed at Southampton.
How did you feel about the news that war had broken out?
In which way? What do you mean, how do I feel?
Well, did you feel any sense of dismay or what?
No, I wanted to get going in it. I felt I was not doing my job if I was out in Australia when I ought to be doing something in Europe. So, strangely enough, when I did land, you couldn't join up. There was no way you could join up, and I had been in the RAFVR. And I went down to their place in Kingsway, and they said, oh, you go home, we'll get in touch with you when we want you. And that dismayed me a bit. So I found, 2 days later, I was taking the tube to my office, and I read in the paper, the recruiting stations were opening, and I looked and I saw there was one down in Ealing. So I got off the train, got a train down to Ealing Common, and by that afternoon I was in the army.
Did it matter to you much whether you were in the army or the RA?
Not really, provided I was in the service.
What happened next?
Well, next I was posted down to Shorncliffe in Kent. Oh, first of all, I had to choose which part of the army I wanted to go into, and they had a blackboard, infantry, artillery and so forth. And I saw horse cavalry, and I thought that sounded terrific. So I signed on for the horse cavalry and went down to Shorncliffe in Kent to do my training, which was a 4 weeks course.
Had you known anything about horses?
Well, I'd learned to ride as a youngster, but that was all. And so I did my training at Shorncliffe and then was posted to Colchester to another cavalry training regiment. And then they recommended me for a commission, but I also heard they were sending a draft out to the Middle East. So I went to see the commanding officer and said, I'm prepared to give up my commission if I can go on the draft. He said, do you know what you're doing? I said, yes. So I was on a ship to the Middle East within a couple of weeks.
Why did you make that decision?
Don't ask me. I was a youngster. I wanted to get in where the war was going on, and the Middle East was one place the war was going on. What was I? 21. I just felt it was my duty to get going. And When I got out of the Middle East, I got to Haifa, and then I joined up in the Yeomanry, in the North Somerset Yeomanry, as a trooper, trooper wise one.
What was the voyage out there like?
Of course, being in the ranks, I had all kinds of dirty jobs to do, but it was all right. Actually, I became a batman. They came round asking for volunteers to be a batman. I thought it would be a good idea. So I became a batman to one of the officers there. And eventually, at Haifa, I joined up North Somerset Yeomanry. And then we were posted up to Syria, to the Lebanon, to go into action. I suppose I'm one of the last people in the world who's been in action by horse. And we were fighting the French. We lost a few people, killed a few of them, up in near Beirut, outside in the hills between Beirut and Damascus.
What kind of arms did you have?
We had Hotchkiss machine guns and CO3 rifles.
And which weapon did you use personally?
Oh, I used a rifle, 303 rifle, yes.
What was the fighting like against the...
Well, we were facing French native troops, spies, down the valley. I can see them now with their horses. And we were on the high ground. We just fired at them. They fired at us. There weren't a lot of people killed. It was fairly innocuous. And eventually, the worst thing was that it was extremely hot. And we had no proper provisions. It was a yeomanry regiment where the art of running a battle was not... They were all amateurs. They didn't really know what they were doing. But eventually we got out on foot. And what happened then? We went back to Palestine. That's right.
Can you give any examples of their amateurishness?
It's a good point. Only they didn't show any leadership at all. I mean, it was left mostly to the non-commissioned officers, the NCOs, because they were ex-regulars, whereas the officers were all amateurs.
Which particular troop or squadron were you in?
I was in A squadron. I've forgotten which troop that was, or what troop we were. But it was A squadron. And it was a good experience. We left our horses in the valley with a horse handler and went along the last 4 or 5 miles on foot.
Did you take any prisoners?
No, I don't think we did. We never really got closer. I mean, we were always a few hundred yards away and just firing at long range to them. No, I don't remember any prisoners.
Would you dismount and fire?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we left the horses down in the valley behind us and went in on foot.
Did you take casualties in your own unit?
We had some, yes. One of the officers was killed. We had people injured, yes. A fellow next to me was... I think he survived, but he had a bullet in him. Yes, we only went on for a couple of days or so, but it was a bit unpleasant at the time.
Did you come across any of the French there?
The Free French, yes indeed, but not during this battle, because we were against the Vichy French there, and we were doing it on, we didn't have any Free French at the time. But of course later on in Palestine, I came across quite a few of them.
What were relations like with the French?
Oh, perfectly good. But of course the Vichy French were a bit vicious. Anyway, I went back from there and I'm now in 1942, I suppose. It's 41, 42. And I heard that we were sent back to Palestine, that was right, near Haifa. And I was getting a bit fed up with it by then, because we lived very rough. And I heard that they were selecting people to go to OCTU, Officer Cadet Training Unit, in Cairo. So I went to see the RSM, the Regimental Sergeant Major, and said, "Sir, can I be recommended?" He said, "No, of course you can't. Why should you be recommended?" I said, "Well, I do speak French and German. I was at Cambridge." And he looked at me and said, "Oh, all right, I'll recommend you." So a week after that, I went to Cairo to Octu and had 4 months there of training as an officer.
What was that like?
That was the hardest work you could ever do. I mean, you're up every morning at 6 o'clock, on parade at 6:30. It was a tough course. And in the heat of a Cairo summer, it was quite exhausting. But it was a good training. And then after 3.5 months of that, some people got made into NCOs that I was, and I was just very worried. So I was called up to the commanding officer and said, "We're commissioning you tomorrow. We're not commissioning anybody senior to you because we need them here, but you're not important, so we're commissioning you." So I was commissioned in Cairo in 1942, yes.
What was life like in Cairo as compared with Palestine?
Compared with?
Palestine.
Oh, well, Cairo was pure, a very luxurious life. Life hadn't changed there at all because the Egyptians weren't particularly interested in the war anyway. Life was very easy. And I mean, one went out of restaurants, it was a very pleasant life. And once you had white bands on your shoulder to show that you're officer cadet, and you were treated with great respect. It was rather pleasant. And eventually, when I got commissioned, that was July, but we'd retreated in the desert then, back towards Cairo. And I'd come across a chap who was in a new thing called SRS, Special Raiding Squadron. And I said to him, "How does one get into this?" He said, "A fellow called David Sterling's running it." I said, "How do I find David?" Oh, he said, "He lives in he's got a flat just outside the center of Cairo." I said, "Give me the address." So I got his address and I went down, knocked at his flat, which was in a suburb of Cairo, and his batman answered the door, and I said, "I'd like to see Captain Sterling." He said, "You can't, he's in his bath." I said, "I'm jolly well going to see him. You tell him I want to see him." So I went in, there was David in his bath. I said, "Sir, may I join your regiment?" And he looked me up and down and said, "Well, I've got a draft going out to Gezira tomorrow. If you're on one of the trucks, yes. If not, no." So I found out where they were going from, got on the truck, got down to, it wasn't Gezira, it was some other Egyptian name. Anyway, got down to their camp on the Suez Canal. And from then till the end of the war, I was with them.
How long was your interview with David Sterling?
Very short. Very short, a few minutes, that was all, not more.
Didn't he want to know anything about you?
Not really. I think he took one look at you and he thought, well, I showed some initiative in any way getting to him, and he thought that was all right, I think. And I went into Paddy Main's squadron, and I was with Paddy Main until 1944.
What was Paddy Main like?
Frightening, ghastly man. But he was as brave as they come. I mean, he was a wonderful leader, but he was a pretty terrifying person to work with. Indeed, in the end, when we were back in England in 1944, and he'd been over to Norway, turned up unexpectedly, I was in charge of the camp at Chelmsford, and he walks in one, and somebody sent me a message, because I was living outside, I'd got married earlier that year, and I got a message, and you better hurry up back to the mess because the colonel's turned up from Norway and he's in a hell of a mood. And I got back there, and he said to me, I'd been with him, 2.5-3 years. He said to me, "Where were you?" And I said, "Oh, sir, I've been staying outside the camp." He said, "It's not good enough," he said. "Right. You're sacked." And that was it. I was sacked from the SAS. Just like that, from one moment to another.
What was his specific objection?
That I hadn't been in the camp when he wanted me to be there.
Should you have been?
There was no particular reason. I mean, the war was over virtually. And I was running the camp from an administrative point of view. We weren't training for anything. Anyway, it didn't really matter to me. I'd had enough of the SAS by then. And then I was posted to...
How long had you been in the SAS for?
3 years. That's 3 years.
Well, going back to when you first joined, you said that you went off at Sterling's suggestion. Where were you going off to on that truck?
Sorry, we went down to his headquarters. You mean, I saw him in his flat. And then that's when he agreed to take me if I got down to the headquarters. And got on, and a few days after that, we took a jeep across the desert into the sand seas. So we got to sand seas, and that's where we operated against the coast road. We used to go out every day and shoot up the coast road. And the Germans there. We took, we did quite a lot of action there.
Can you describe some of the action that you were in, please?
Let me see. I had a patrol of three jeeps. We went up the sand sea, right through the sand sea. I had three jeeps, five chaps with me. We mined the coast road. We used to go up, wait for a German convoy to go through, and then lay mines for the next, catch the next one. So we blew out quite a lot of trucks there. And then we would retreat into a desert, stay there for a couple of days, and come back onto the coast road again. Our main job was to cut the coast road, keep it cut all the time, which we did every 3 days. And
didn't the Germans try to hunt you out?
They couldn't get to us because we were deep down the sand sea, and they didn't have that. We had jeeps, we could do that. They couldn't follow us, their trucks wouldn't go through that sand. They'd get stuck. No, they never hunted us out at all, and I don't think their transport wasn't good enough for that. Without jeeps, you couldn't move. It was only jeeps you could use.
Why could jeeps handle those kinds of...
Because they have a booster gear. You can get down... I beg your pardon. They have a booster gear where you can get much lower gear. And you have four-wheel drive.
What kind of armaments did you have there?
We had machine guns. What was a machine gun? Not a Vickers, what was it? God, my mind's going these days.
Bren?
We had Brens, but mostly we used machine guns, 303 machine gun. But I can't remember, it was a Vickers machine gun we had, mounted on the mudguard, so we had two of them. The driver could fire one, his passenger could fire one. And on the mudguard, on the bonnet, we had them mounted.
Were you taking any casualties in these raids on the coast road?
Some people did. We didn't have any mitre patrol, no. Because they never could fire back on us, really. We just went in, laid mines, fired on them when they were stopped by the mines, and then they couldn't even see where we were doing it from because we did it at night, so it was pretty safe.
And you were in charge of the patrol of three jeeps?
My patrol, yes, there were lots of patrols, each one consisting of three jeeps.
How many men in a jeep?
Two to each jeep.
So you were in charge of six men?
Yes.
What rank did you have then?
I think I was a full lieutenant by then, yes, a full lieutenant.
Do you remember the men who were under you in that patrol?
I got pictures of them. I'm damned if I remember their names anymore.
Were they English?
Oh, yes. They were all chaps who joined what was called then the Special Raiding, the SRS, Special Raiding Squadron. Yes, they'd all people who'd either come out from England with David Sterling and Paddy Mayne, or heard of it as I did in the Middle East and joined up there. You see, they'd all come out from England, David Sterling, to raid Beirut and north and south of Beirut. They landed from the sea. That was the reason they came out, was to shoot up the Germans from the coast and land by ship. It wasn't successful. They were too late. And that's why they came over to the desert and started their work. David Sterling was an incredible personality. I mean, this was all his idea. And as he had great influence at headquarters, he could get anything done by them.
What was David Sterling's personality like in comparison with Paddy Mann?
Quite different. David Sterling was absolutely delightful. Very pleasant fellow indeed. Never upset anybody. Whereas Paddy was a fellow who had been... Well, Paddy drank heavily. When he drank, he did... I mean, you felt life... Your life was my most dangerous moments, but being in the officer's mess with Paddy, having had too much to drink, you never knew what he was going to do next. Whereas David didn't drink much, but Paddy did.
What type of unpredictable things did Paddy Mann do in the mess?
Good question. What did he do? Oh, I remember, yes. I said something which upset him. He threw me on the ground. Oh, you remember. We all had beards then, because we weren't allowed to shave. And he threw me down. He'd played rugby for Ireland. I mean, he was a hell of a big chap, 6'4". And he put his knees on my arms like that. And he said to them, "Bring me a razor." So one of the chaps brought him. And without water and without soap, he shaved off half my beard and he was as drunk as can come. I thought he was going to cut my throat. It was the most dangerous moment of the war.
You mean he shaved the right-hand side and left the left?
Yes, right, exactly.
Or the other way around?
Well, one or the other, I can't remember now. But he was a wonderful soldier. In action, you couldn't have a better man. But out of action, he was a menace.
Had you provoked him?
Not purposefully, certainly. Perhaps I did in some way, or something I said. I always talk too much. Yes. But then we saw quite a lot of action together afterwards, and he was always all right. But then David Sterling got captured in Europe. Then when we went to France, I went there before Paddy. Paddy turned up eventually. And he was perfectly all right there.
Could we just go back to North Africa?
Sure.
When you were doing these raids on the coast road, to what superior were you reporting?
My squadron leader was a fellow called Bill Fraser, who'd been with Paddy since the beginning of the war. He was a splendid chap. And he was a squadron commander. Unfortunately, he took to drink and he left the army in disgrace after the war. Rather sad. But he was a Gordon Highlander, splendid chap. So he was my immediate superior.
How did you communicate with him when you were out on these patrols?
How indeed?
Would he come and visit you?
No, I think, as far as I remember, we were just given instructions and was left to our own initiative what we wanted to do. We never had any communication.
So,
not in the desert.
So when you went out to attack the coastal road, how many days would you stay out?
Oh, I'd be out 2 or 3 weeks, I think. Yes, about 3 weeks.
What were you living off?
Oh, we took good provisions with us. Big 4-gallon water cans. We carried water and food and ammunition, of course.
Did the German Air Force try to shoot you up?
On one occasion, yes. Near... Yes, they did. And they even dropped a bomb on us and didn't do any harm. But yes, they did try and shoot us up.
Was this in the desert?
In the desert, yes. It wasn't Benghazi, it was east of Benghazi. What was the name of the place? I'd have to look on the map now to see. It was quite deep in the desert. They followed our tracks and shot us out. Yes, but it was very impossible for them to do much in that harm.
Not Tobruk?
No, much deeper in the desert. We were about 150 miles into the desert.
What was it like living in the desert?
Very nice, very clean, very satisfactory. You couldn't have a cleaner atmosphere. It was quite agreeable.
Did you come across any inhabitants?
No, there weren't any where we were.
How did you feel when you knew you were going off on one of these raiding expeditions?
Well, I was young. To me, it was a great adventure. I was so glad to get into some activity.
Do you know how many times you would have gone out to do such patrols?
Well, our base was in the Sand Sea, and I think I must have made 3 or 4 of them, something like that, not very many. Because the army had retreated so far back towards Alexandria. I did, I think, 3 or 4. I can't quite remember in detail.
Could you get lost?
No. We had sun compasses. You never got lost. And we had magnetic compass and sun compass. So we could drive right on a bearing with no problem. There was no difficulty.
Did you stay healthy or fall sick?
Yes. Actually, it was a rather healthy atmosphere because the desert's a very clean place. So, yes, we were pretty well.
How did you exercise discipline over the men?
Well, the SAS was a very well-disciplined unit. Nobody ever took advantage of you simply because you were on your own or anything. I had never any problem, never even thought about it. People did as they were told, and that was that.
Did you have any insignia?
Any?
Insignia?
What do you mean by insignia?
Any marks on your uniform?
On our uniform. I think I've got pictures of it.
Oh, don't worry about the pictures. We'll look at
no, I don't mean. I just want to see if I had. I don't think we wore any. Not in the desert, we didn't. Later on, we did. But, no, I don't think we had any insignia at all. The idea is that we were a sort of secret army that nobody should know that we existed.
But if you were captured, you would be recognizable as British army?
Oh, yes, it'd be recognizable. It's a good question, right? You see, I tell you, my recollection's so terrible. I don't think we were... You see, SRS at that time was an unknown unit, and nobody wanted to publicise it at all, that it even existed. No, I don't think we had any insignia or anything on our jeeps or on our uniform.
Would you use any of the oases in the desert?
We went down to Kufra, yes, Kufra oasis. And we loaded up with water there and so forth.
And what was Paddy Men's role? Would he go into action or...
Oh, you couldn't keep him out of action. No, Paddy Men was... He just loved actions, one thing he lived for. And... I mean, his job was to create havoc among the German army, which we managed to do to some extent.
Did you see much of David Stirling?
No, I saw him 2 days before he was captured. We were in the Sand Sea then, and he came and joined us. And he was going over to Tunisia. He decided he'd go to Tunisia and shoot them up. And he got captured on the way. That was the end of the war, as far as he was concerned. Yes, he was captured, I think, 2 days after I'd been with him.
Were relations between officers formal or informal?
All in first names, except with Paddy Men. You didn't call him... you called him sir, but I mean, mostly it was pretty easygoing, yes.
What would Paddy Men call you?
I suppose he called me by my surname, I think. Yes.
Any other incidents that happened to you whilst you were in the desert?
No, the only... important thing was our job was to cut the coast road, which was what we did.